Well, hello and welcome to 2026. We're on for another year of the StoneX Australian Cattle and Beef Market Report. My name is Ripley Atkinson. I'm the Australian Meats and Livestock Manager for StoneX based in Sydney, where we're developing price risk management tools for the Australian livestock industry to help the sector manage market and price volatility with our Australian feeder cattle swap. We're brought to you by StoneX Group, a NASDAQ-listed global financial services network with 100 years of experience in global commodity markets. Remember that the trading of derivatives, such as futures, options, and over-the-counter products or swaps may not be suitable for all investors. Derivatives trading involves substantial risk of loss, and you should fully understand the risks prior to trading. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future results. Welcome back. Wishing you all a happy new year. Hope you've had a relaxing break and some time away. Looking forward to getting back into another year of the podcast. But first and foremost, thoughts go out to those people, their families, their livestock in Victoria and Northwest Queensland dealing with fires and floods. We're thinking of you and the challenges you're going through and wishing you all the best when it comes time to recover from those incidents and obviously thinking a lot of your livestock at the minute as well, particularly. Straight into it though, plenty to kick off 2026. We typically think there's downtime over Christmas, New Year, but there's been a fair bit happening. Today, going to do a bit of a recap on the first fortnight of markets and trading and how it's all performing or open the new year. And then to finish off, we'll look at both the live and boxed beef exports for the calendar year 25 and a bit of summary on how that's performed in a really strong year across both of those categories. I'll start with the markets though. You can really see that rain in central Queensland this year has really fired up some demand for light cattle. Steers in particular, light backgrounder and restocker steers have really been supported by that rain. You know, there are a lot of places across northern New South Wales, or I should say central New South Wales, northern New South Wales into southern Queensland that really do need a drink. But you can see, it'll be interesting to see how the box performs tomorrow. But the performance across the yards has been quite solid. And I think a lot of, you know, a lot of producers are acting on that demand, acting on that rainfall that's eventuated, and it's really improved, you know, those prices to kick off the new year. Jumping down to the weaner sales though, we saw a lot of cattle on the border head north. You know, there was nowhere near the demand as what there was, or the pull, I should say, of weaners into New South Wales and Queensland as what there was last year. There was a lot more balanced spread in terms of where the cattle travelled to. But particularly, I think what you'd say is the further south and west those sales went into the western districts, the more localised those cattle stayed. So the northern demand was there at those border sales, Wangaratta and Wodonga, but certainly not to the same extent as 2025's edition. But, you know, a lot of that's got to do with the lack of summer rainfall that those northern New South Wales, Queensland regions had had or are continuing to have, and the dryness of that country. Looking at some specific categories and trends, light heifers are still at those sales or are operating and were operating at $1 a kilo discount to heifers are operating at $1 a kilo discount to steers. That's mirroring other sales in both auction systems, online and sale yards that we've seen throughout 2025, and it shows a real lack of intent to rebuild. What we're going to see out of that southern system is a restock first and then a rebuild. These producers are looking to generate some cash flow, repair their balance sheets, and want to obviously jump in on a short-term trade. If there was the demand for, you know, future breeding females at those weaner sales from local regions, you would see that spread a lot narrower than $1 a kilo. So it's pretty clear that there's not the intent just yet to rebuild, but they will look to restock and do a backgrounding trade, most likely fatten some cattle and get some cash flow back in the system. I think the other aspect to consider about the weaner sales, which I picked up, and it's pretty common, but it's worth a mention. weaned cattle well and truly outperformed the unweaned, particularly when there's a bit of uncertainty on season or a buyer has cattle or wants to purchase cattle to truck a long distance. They want to know with confidence those stock are going to perform. And, you know, it's pretty clear those unweaned cattle were well and truly discounted at those sales if they weren't ready to obviously get on a truck and get off it and perform. I think to wrap up on the restocker front, it looks likely that into the end of January, we're going to see continued storm and rain across Queensland. I'm sure, and I've got a number of conversations this week have told me that plenty of people will be hoping it comes further south. But I think if that rain continues to eventuate, watch the Queenslanders pin their ears back and really get stuck into light cattle. Green grass and muddy boots, they're a recipe for good demand. And I think, you know, we're going to see it a bit more this year. And we've seen it plenty of times before. There's nothing more a producer hates than seeing a paddock full of grass with no cattle in it. Central Queensland, I think, will be a good example, and we'll look to see how those buyers in those regions perform and look to demand stock over the next couple of months. Moving on to feedlots, the situation with China has thrown a real spanner in the works for HGP-free cattle and programs and brands in terms of demand and requirements of stock really from April onwards, because a lot of those brands, programs, exporters, processors are, you know, under the assumption that that quota of about 205,000 metric tons is going to be filled. So once that happens, and those cattle purchased in March, April, May onwards, when they exit that program, where are they going to go? And that's the question the market, the meat end of the market, is asking itself at the minute. I think we're going to see beef export prices into Asia take a hit because of this situation with China, and that's ultimately going to have to flow back at some point to feeder prices. When we need to continue processing cattle and exporting that beef that we've harvested, we can't stand still. The supply chain needs to continue to keep moving, and I think, you know, there's conversations this week to me and last have indicated there's a general consensus when in market customers and countries have an opportunity to push prices down or push prices lower, they will, being fully aware that Australia's beef supply chain has got to keep moving. We can't just stop because of a trade discrepancy or an issue with tariffs. The supply chain's got to keep rolling, so we've got to keep moving that beef. And that's sort of the concern some conversations have indicated to me this week. I think when we look back at a local level, what that actually means and the sort of outcomes of that, I think we're going to see a cycle out of non-pilled cattle and a cycle out of Angus. I mentioned it again, or I mentioned it first this time last year, and it proved to generally eventuate, but I think we're going to see it in a more widespread nature in 2026. A lot of feedlots are going to look to shift their preferences or exposure away from Angus because of the fact that Angus are most likely going to get very dear in the middle of winter because of a lack of heavy feeder supply. And then the second thing alongside that is this China situation is causing a bit of a move away, obviously, from those longer fed cattle and a rethink of exposure or strategies on feeding programs. What that looks like and how that shift works, who knows, but I think it will, we'll see a cycle into 100-day cattle and more short fed programs, and then the mid-fed HGP-free programs as well, which just gives the feedlot and the brand or the exporter better market access into a wider array of customers across the world. And obviously, the HGP-free cattle and beef is important, but if the premium's not there like it is in China, then there's a lack of justification to pay for the feeders, the physical feeder cattle themselves to do it. I think overall, though, feeders and grids have started the year reasonably well. Pricing's generally firm on how the year ended. If you could argue it's actually a little bit better. What I'd wrap up there is there's going to be, all eyes to me are on what those 100-day prices for March, April, May look like. Watch how they perform or where they're at. They're going to give you a good indication of where the feeder price might need to be or where it will be based on profitability and that signal from the processor. Moving on to the processes, though, while I'm mentioning them, the cow market's been exceptionally strong to start the year. I don't think the cow job here in Australia has woken up to the fact that Brazil is now exporting beef into the US and only paying its 26.4% tariff, which is its standard out of quota rate. Brazil effectively filled the 65,000 tonnes of out of quota product in the space of really 10 days. So they're now paying 26.4%, and obviously their cost of production and their actual cost of manufacturing beef is far lower than Australia's. So I don't think the Australian market has awoken up to that fact. 90s imported prices into the US have fallen about 20 cents a pound since the highs in November. If you convert that to Australian dollars, that's a fall of a dollar a kilo in about 2 months. So I don't think the cow price here domestically has realised that fact. And I think we should expect to see some softening in the cow market into February. Grass kills are obviously going to pick up. And once the market realises that Brazilian situation, I think we'll see a bit of a decline in that that cow price here domestically, particularly in Queensland. Obviously, the bulk of Queensland's kill is grain-fed, but you've also got to remember on the demand front through January, most packers or most processors that are working are utilising grain-fed cattle. So there's a lack of demand at the minute for grass-fed stock. They prioritise grain feds to get them through January when producers are on holidays. So when we come back to a bit of a more normal market into February, I think that's where you'll start to see a bit of pressure on price. And we've seen it a little bit this week already. New South Wales cows down about four to six cents. But, you know, cows are still making some really good money. And I just don't think it's woken up to that Brazilian situation just yet. Moving on, though, to finish us up on a review of pretty much how both the boxed beef exports went for 2025 calendar year and also the live exports. I'll start with live exports. Really positive result. We've seen sort of 3 to 4 years realistically of continued steady growth. Volumes up to their highest level since 2020. We exported about 792,000 head of cattle. A steady increase, growth of about 3.5% year on year, but growth nonetheless. And I think a good outcome. In the middle of last year, I forecast live exports to hit 850,000. I think I overestimated the growth in the availability of those Brahman feeders out of the north. They are a lot more slower to mature than obviously your southern cattle, but I think they are coming, and I probably jumped the gun on the expectation of realising that supply of those Brahman feeders, but I think this year we are going to see that supply come forward, and even November-December 25 numbers, admittedly that's got a fair bit to do with Ramadan and Eid al-Fitri and the timing of those cultural events in Indonesia in Feb, March of this year. So obviously there's higher demand, but we exported close to 100,000 head of cattle across those 2 months out of Darwin. And I think we are going to see some strong results in terms of live exports this year. On a country level, Indonesian volumes reached their highest level since 2020. We exported 583,000 head of cattle last year out of or to Indonesia, whereas Vietnam came in at number two. It was once a powerhouse where we exported over 200,000 head of cattle to that country. We shipped 84,000 head to Vietnam last year. That was the lowest volume we've exported since 2022. I think a point that's important to highlight, and it does deserve a mention, is the concentration of Indonesia's market share. 73% of our live exports or live cattle exports in 25 went to Indonesia. That was its highest market share as a percentage since 2009. Whereas Vietnam, since its highs of or market share highs of 28% in 2020, have now dwindled to 11% in 2025. So a really big decline on that Vietnamese side, but also you can tell and see the dominance of Indonesia. the economics, the cultural connection, and the benefits of Indonesia can't be disputed. But we know, you know, market diversification is important, and over concentration, as we've seen in box beef markets and exports, they can prove to be problematic. And I just think it's important to recognise that that overall concentration of Indo at 73%, that's quite high. But aside from that, a fantastic result. And as I started with, 792,000, we've had continued growth really since 2021. Volumes have been, you know, performing quite well overall. Obviously, Indonesia, as our major trading partner in that that space, is really demanding product, and it's really pleasing to see, you know, a continued improvement. I expect to see further growth in overall volumes exported again in 2026. Moving on to the box beef markets. What a year. Volumes hit a new record, 1.545 million metric tons. December itself as a month, so December 25 ended or was the second highest monthly export volumes on record, only behind July 25. So really pleasing to see how strong December had performed. And I think that's becoming a bit of a theme, is exporters rushing to get product out the door and then obviously reach market to land in that end quota timing within the new year. In my H2 outlook report forecast for exports, I had it at 1.531. So I was only out by 0.6% or 14,000 metric tons, which was not a bad outcome. What I would want to like to highlight, though, and it's I've mentioned this across the growth in, you know, slaughter numbers and things like that, comparing 2025 to 2022, exports alone, beef exports, have risen by 82% or nearly 700,000 metric tons. So in the space of 3 years, we've effectively doubled our beef exports. It shows you how quickly the supply chain's recovered, and obviously underpinning all of that's the herd size, but a really impressive result to see the significance in that growth in actual tonnage and percentage terms. Grain-fed exports to a new record for nearly 450,000 tonnes. Year on year, or comparing the growth to 24 volumes, grain-fed exports up 20% or nearly 75,000 metric tonnes. Really big numbers here. And there's, you can see it's not just a steady increase, it's an astronomical rise, even comparing 2024, which in itself was a record across pretty much most export categories. What's noteworthy, though, I think, and it's become a theme, you know, throughout last year and will continue to be as a reminder of this long-term transition towards a grain-fed centric production system, but it's the difference between the grass-fed and grain-fed exports. So the grass-fed volumes did rise, but they were only just higher, realistically, than the last peak of export or the last peak of the cattle cycle, which was 2014-15. Whereas grain-fed exports compared to 2014-15 were nearly double. So there was about 270,000 tonnes exported in 14-15, and we're doing 450,000 tonnes now, whereas the peak of grass-fed exports last year at sort of 1.1 million metric tonnes only beat 2015 by 50,000 tonnes. So my point there is it gives you an idea of the significance in the expansion of the grain-fed system, which we know, and obviously how much that's flowing through to exports as well. Getting into the countries, looking at the big four first, the US hit a new record, surpassed 2015 volumes by close to 40,000 tonnes, 450,000 metric tonnes we shipped last year. But I think what's most important there is the genuine stability in export volumes. We hovered either side of about 40,000 tonnes a month to the US in 2025. And I think that's a really solid, clear indication of genuine, you know, stable demand for Australian beef, and clearly, you know, orders being placed for our product throughout the year, and all of that, you know, records broken, et cetera, genuine stability in export volumes on a monthly basis, all that's happening while the, you know, world trading environment was flipped upside down in April by the Trump administration's tariff agenda. So really pleasing result there to see that stability in monthly volumes, and obviously nice to see a real highlight in how much it's grown that market in a very short space of time since its lows in 22. China took spot number two, also recorded its second highest export year on record, only behind the 300,000 tonnes we shipped in 2019. Year on year, volumes up 41%, which is a massive lift. And I think the biggest highlight of that, and what's really telling, is the lift in grain-fed exports. They rose by 52% compared to 24. And obviously that rise in grain-fed exports is clearly offsetting the lower imports from the US. That's clear as day to see. So the Chinese are looking towards Australia for that product, which does make you scratch your head and wonder why they would bother putting a 55% tariff on our beef exports out of quota. So finally, to wrap up, Japan, volumes highest in 5 years. Korea continues its record-breaking cycle. It passed its 24 calendar year record by another 10% last year. 221,000 tonnes we shipped in 2024, so a really good result there as well. I continue to mention this when I raise exports in the podcast, the emerging markets, Dubai, Malaysia, Thailand, UK, Singapore, New Zealand, the Netherlands, all of them experienced double-digit growth in percentage terms, led by the UK. Its exports lifted 167%, and then Thailand came in at 28%. So across the board, I think, you know, yes, they're smaller markets. Yes, they're obviously not taking the volume of product that some of our other majors that I just mentioned are. But, you know, we're looking across three different continents, the Middle East, Europe, and Asia. We're all seeing, you know, really strong improvements in different countries within those continents in growth. And I think that's really positive to show that diversity. Thailand itself, since 2020, export volumes on a calendar year basis have grown 330% or 22,000 metric tons. Really pleasing to see that market become well and truly established and, you know, continued growth year on year. The UK as well, that free trade agreement is working its magic. We're really starting to see strong improvements year on year in that market, and because of its value on a dollars a kilo rate, really important to see that continued improvement. Exports from Australia to the UK now well and truly at their highest level since the 1970s. So fantastic outcome there as well. And Dubai itself, growth of 27% year on year. It again hit a new record. It's a high value market. It takes a lot of grain fed chilled product. And it's, you know, fast becoming much like Thailand, a smaller but established market that clearly sees value and wants Australian beef. Across the board, both from the live perspective and obviously the boxed situation, really pleasing to see some positive results. Obviously a fantastic year for the export market. Processors and exporters are handling the volume. Ports are handling the volume of product we're moving. And clearly around the world, someone's prepared to eat it. Now that depends on what price, but overall 2025 was an exceptional year on that export front. That's all from me this week. Would love some questions. So if today's episode or any others have raised any, send me an email to ripley.atkinson@stonex.com or record a voice note of yourself, where you're from, the question, and I'll get to answering it in the next episode. Remember to share this with your mates, follow it, review it if you're appreciating what we're sharing. Feedback's always welcome. But thanks for tuning in for the first episode. Looking forward to a cracker of a year. Thanks for listening. Take care, and we'll see you next time. Cheers.